podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Jones! Bowden!
He's got it! England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins!
Stokes flashes it away through the covers for four, and England have won the match!
Hello and welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket. I hope you've been enjoying our look back at 100 years of the Cricketer magazine in our two-part series, which really does prove the depth and intrigue that the Cricketer magazine has revealed over the last 100 years, and also the incredible events that the cricket has thrown up as well. You can still get those two podcasts on Acast or also on the Cricketer website. Also, we've had some lively debate in the world's best cricket club as well, our virtual cricket club, with Rob Key in the cricket club last week and talking about this India tour. And, well, India tour has left its best till last, hasn't it, really? Because this game in Pune, the final of the ODI series, was, for a long time, it looked a fairly straightforward victory for India. Then England sort of came back with a bang towards the end, and finally the Indians won with that sort of nerve-holding last over by Natarajan. It's an interesting one. I suppose in the end, the Indians have finished up with all the spoils from this two-month odyssey that England have done around the Indian subcontinent. In fact, they haven't. One calls it an odyssey, but they've only been to basically three venues, actually. So it hasn't been the traditional tour of India, but still full of fascinating cricket. And although India have won all the giant trophies in each of the three tournaments, Simon, there's been some fantastic cricket capped off by this game.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, it's been quite a one-sided tour, really. I mean, England, when they've won, have dominated the games. And India, when they've won, have dominated their victory matches as well. This one, I thought, was just a really interesting game of cricket because it didn't play out to that normal sort of one-day formula, which is batsmen going in and whacking it and then the other side coming in and whacking it and either knocking them off or falling well short, e.g. the first match, e.g. the second match. It actually made batsmen think, and England had to think at the end, and India had to think at the end, and it was also similar at the end of India's innings as well. They couldn't just go out there and whack it for the last 10 overs because they'd lost wickets, and so they had to manage the last 10 overs of their innings. So for that reason, I thought, well, A, it was the closest match of the tour, and it was also the most interesting match of the tour. You were panning it earlier, I noticed, on social media, saying, oh, this is really boring, you know, a bowler's just getting clubbed around everywhere. But I thought there was a real fascination in the game. You know, you thought, what, 329 played, what was it in the end, 322 for nine. You know, really sort of compelling cricket. I mean, almost from nowhere and superb from Sam Curran. I wonder if that's going to be a sort of breakthrough innings for Sam Curran in his international career.
Well, if he can get in the team, that's the problem. Does he get in the England one-day side when everybody's available? You've got Archer, you've got Chris Wokes, who'll probably come back in the summer as well to play in the one-day side. And by the way, Chris Wokes is our guest in the Virtual Cricket Club this Thursday coming. An early start, actually, because he's in India, back in India, to play in the IPL. And so we're starting at 5:30 p.m. this Thursday with Chris Wokes, very kindly giving up his time for an hour or so to chat to us in the Virtual Cricket Club. You can join us by going to www.worldsbestcricketclub.com. £6 a month to join that club. And we guarantee a live stream every week. So following Chris Wokes, we've got David Gower. We've also got Ebony Rainford-Brent lined up as well as the next three guests. So some really interesting characters to hear from. So please join us and help support the Professional Cricketers Trust. Wokes, as I say, will come back into the side. So even though Sam Curran has proved his absolute brilliant ability with the bat, he hasn't done that much with the ball, actually, in this series. And I think what I found interesting in this game was actually the way the pitch seemed to help the bowlers more. Certainly at the early stages when the batsmen were just pumping it into the stands, that's when I found it a bit boring, and I posted on social media that, you know, there's no balance between bat and ball, therefore it's just predictable. But gradually, as darkness fell and perhaps the dew descended, there seemed to be a bit more in the pitch, which the bowlers used cleverly. Scoreball pressure also had an effect. The ball just did enough to make it interesting, and that's the key. And several pundits have been saying we need one new ball per innings in these white ball 50-over matches, because you get different phases. The ball is swings a tiny bit at the start, maybe seems a little bit, then it goes really flat, and then you get reverse swing and a bit of grip with for the spinners later in the innings. Whereas if you use two white balls, it just becomes basically a sort of six fest. I know it wasn't today, but generally it is, and I think it proved, actually, when the ball does a little bit, it makes the matches interesting.
I thought one of the fascinating aspects of today's game was that India changed their game plan. Now, whether they were forced to do it by England's victory in the last match, I'm not quite sure, but they were far more positive in the opening overs, in the power play. And, of course, they lost wickets, which meant that, you know, they had to sort of rethink their strategy. But Pandya and Pant, 99, 11.4 overs. I think it was at that point you were saying this is getting ridiculous. You know, bowlers just being pumped around everywhere. But even that took some nerve, because they were about 150 for four. And if they'd lost one or two more wickets then, they would have fell really short of the target they needed to win the match. So I just thought it was throughout the match, really, it was really fascinating. Of course, when England batted and chased, they lost early wickets as well. So they had to sort of change their game plan as well. You know, this idea, oh, you just keep on going. In fact, what they did do in the end was just take it really deep. And they were, you know, I wonder whether towards the end they should have taken a few more singles, whether Sam Curran should have trusted Mark Wood. And even in that last over, when Curran drilled one out to wide long on, could they have got back for two? Rhys Topley was at the non-strikers end. Could Topley have got back for two in the time? You know, I don't know. I'd have to look at it again. But it did go wide of the long-on fielder. It was almost as though Sam Curran was saying, right, I've either got to hit this for four or six or nothing. But a two was an option as well. You can understand why they didn't take it. You know, if there had been a run out, you think, well, what have we done? But, you know, it's those little decisions I think the batsmen were forced to take today that they weren't forced to take in the other matches when they were, but you know, they were just six fest, really. I mean, the ground at Pune is a bit like that, isn't it? The boundaries are not that short, and the boundaries are not that big, and it's a very good pitch. The other thing I noticed today, Yoz, as well, I mean, I haven't looked back at the record books and studied them all, but we had a situation today in India in a one-day match where England played two spinners and India played one. I mean, what was going on? The game is changing.
Yeah, and well, it's, I suppose it depends in a way who your best bowlers are. And if your best bowlers are a spinner, as in England's case, it has been for some time in one-day cricket, Rashid is so consistent, and actually so is Moeen Ali, in fact. So they can bank on those two. It's more the seamers, certainly the second string seamers, they're not quite so sure about. And the other thing, just alluding to your how the batting sides have had to change their strategies a bit. Of course, one of England's great strengths when they got to number one in the world and won the World Cup was that depth of batting. So they had Liam Plunkett, they had Adil Rashid. They really didn't have... Mark Wood would come in last, and even he can bat. So they had a bit more depth with the likes of... I think Plunkett was a very important man in that side, because he could hit big sixes. And, you know, when you get a number nine who can hit the ball, remember that game at Trent Bridge when he pulled off a tie by hitting the last ball for six. It's a reassurance to a batting team if you've got the characters like that. You can come in at number nine. So you can't ever write off a team because you've got somebody like that. Rashid, I remember in England's first match after their reinvention in 2015, Rashid got about 60-odd when England got past 400. So that those lower-order players are really important because they affect how the top order can approach it. They can, if they have that depth where everybody bats, you can really go for it with total abandon, knowing you've got some safety valves down the order. But England today, with a slightly longer tail, with the Wood at 10 and Rhys Topley at 11, there's just a little bit less security as a result. And that
was a Tom Curran problem, wasn't it? It's the Tom Curran problem, really. The fact they can't trust Tom Curran with the ball at the moment. He's had a really rough time of it. Of course, he does add something with the batter, you know, in that tail, as you say.
Overall, England did tremendously well to compete in that last game in the end, actually, having lost all those wickets. Overall, what have they learnt? That will be one of my questions. And have they learnt that there is any backup bowling, for instance? Have they learnt who those backup bowlers might be? Reece Topley did okay, I thought. They haven't tried Matt Parkinson, which I think is a shame. And they could have sort of learnt something about him maybe in one of these games. So, you know, if you've got Archer and if you've got Wokes and you've got Wood, you've got a three-pronged seam attack, which can be augmented by the likes of Sam Curran and so on, maybe Chris Jordan even. But one of those three key bowlers, Archer, Wokes or Wood, is injured. Who's the next in line? Now, I don't think they're quite sure about that yet.
Well, one of the problems I think all teams have got is if you're not sort of right at the top of your game or you're not a top quality bowler, you know, the likes of Archer, for example, then there's going to be some severe punishment out there for you unless you play on the sort of pitches that they played on, say, in the World Cup final, you know, which is very different from the ones that England have been playing on. You know, if the pitches are good, like they were in Pune, like they have been in England quite a lot in recent years, if you're not right on it, you are going to disappear. I think that's the challenge, isn't it? That's the challenge for bowlers these days. Is absolutely sort of merciless. The batting is merciless, as we saw from England in that second one day international. I mean, we're just knocking off that target, no trouble at all. You know, six wickets, six overs to spare. I mean, it was unbelievable hitting it at one point. That stand between Stokes and Bairstow of 175. You asked the question, you know, what have we learned? I mean, in a strange way, this sort of three-match ODI series right at the end, it's a bit of an anomaly, really, isn't it? You play the Test series, the World Test Championship, final place was at stake for both sides. So, you know, every there's a lot of focus on that. And then the T20 series, of course, everyone knows that the World Cup T20 is going to be played in India in the autumn, so there's a lot of focus on that. And then you think, well, the one day is what do they mean? You know, and England didn't have Root and they didn't have Archer and they didn't have Wokes, and India didn't have Bumrah, but didn't have Bumrah for quite a lot of the tour. But you know, what is it worth? Well, there are World Cup qualifying points at stake, but you'd expect, well, India have already qualified because they're the hosts, and England have to finish, basically you finish in the top eight and you qualify. Well, it's 7+1. India will finish in the top eight, obviously, so that, you know, there's that. But there's not much more, is there, really? The next World Cup is 2.5 years away. But in a strange way, I actually found the one day series perhaps more interesting than anything else. I mean, the Test series was very one-sided. One one-sided first game and then three one-sided games in favour of England three one-sided games in favour of India in the last three Test matches. And the T20s tended to be really dominated by one side or the other, you know, 3-2 to India. But I thought this series was actually more compelling. I thought England should have done much better in the first game. And what do you think about this idea that England say, no, this is the way we play in one-day cricket? I don't know. Did you not think sometimes you've got to adapt? You've got to be a bit cannier?
Well, I think they have been a bit better over the last year or two, sort of from about 2018 onwards, from that defeat in Cardiff against Pakistan, you know, where they really didn't adapt to the pitch, I think they have been better. And generally, the 50-over format is a proper game of cricket, isn't it? Whereas a 20-over game can be just won or lost in an over, like we saw in the final in 2016, where Carlos Brathwaite hit those four sixes and West Indies were not winning that game until he happened to locate the middle of the bat four times and then they won. So I think T20 can be just swung by one dramatic spell, two overs of either hitting or bowling or fielding. But the 50-over game has the chance to ebb and flow a little bit more, and the ball gradually does get a little bit older and the pitch, you know, starts to take a bit of spin. And I don't know. I tell you what I do think, though. I think this trouble is you've got that period between 10 and 40 overs where you've only got four boundary fielders. That's the bit, I think, which I find rather boring, because good players on a good pitch can always find a boundary option. with only four boundary fielders allowed. At least when you've got five boundary fielders, which you have in the whole of a T20 after the power play and in the last 10 overs of a 50-over game, the bowler's got a bit more chance of defending the ropes. As far as England are concerned, looking ahead, yes, I mean, they've got to just keep going with their 50-over side, because one of the things that England learnt prior to the World Cup, sort of when Andrew Strauss took over as director of cricket, really, after the 2015 World Cup, is you've got to be one of the top three sides in the world to win the World Cup consistently over a 2-3 year period. So that's got to be their objective, to stay either number one or number two, to keep a fairly steady side, maybe just adding in one or two ingredients here and there. And the 20-over team is obviously of higher importance over the next few months when they get the chance to play, because they've got to work out what number does Butler bat. Well, I think he's probably answered that by his 83 not out in one of those T20 games to win the match. He has probably got to open, in which case, does Bairstow fit into that? Well, I guess he does. Where does Root, do you consider Root still? Maybe not, but you certainly would for the 50-over cricket, because I think they really missed him in this series to sort of steady the ship. And then what about Milan? Also, what number does Stokes bat in T20? Because I think one thing we learnt from this last three ODIs was Stokes does need a bit of time to get going. And when he does, when he gets those 20 balls out of the way early on and gets his eye in, he can be absolutely deadly. And, you know, 10 sixes in that 99. Amazing how he went from 50 to 99 in, you know, about 12 balls or something ridiculous. So Stokes, if he's going to play T20, he can't bat at six, because I don't think he's any good at just hitting the sixes from the off. So in a way, there's a dilemma there. Do they put Stokes at number three and give him a bit more time to get in a T20 game? Or do they perhaps not play him? And that I know that must be sacrilege to say it, but you do need, in T20, specialists who take no time to get going.
Yeah, well, I think you're right. I mean, there was that time with the England Test team a while back where they had about three number sixes, didn't they? And, you know, they had to sort of try and fit them all in the side. At the moment, it feels like they've almost got too many top order players. They don't quite know what to do with it. My one question, I think, with someone like David Milan is, do you want David Milan knocking singles around in the power play? Or do you challenge him to say, come on, David, can you do more than that? Can you go out there and play really positively in the power play? Because he does have this game where he looks to score 12 off his first 12 balls or something like that, doesn't he? And then he looks to get going. Because if you get out then it sort of doesn't look quite right. And, you know, if England do lose an early wicket, should someone come in and continue to try to strike the ball in the power play?
I think that's a really good question. Basically, it's the Chris Gayle approach, isn't it? He likes to soak up balls early on, but he can make up time with massive sixes. I don't think Milan is quite that player. He's very good, and he uses the pace of the ball brilliantly. He's probably quite slightly less effective against spin. He likes the ball coming onto the bat where he can sort of glide it through the offside or hit it through the covers. Very good shots. He's not someone, I think, who can really catch up significantly with big six hitting, whereas the likes of Butler or even Stokes can. Mm. So it's about power in the end. And, you know, you all look back at these matches, and most matches, certainly T20, are won by the team that hits the most sixes. And it sounds a bit simplistic to say it, but it's a fact.
Yeah. The other thing as well, which has been mentioned, is whether Root should have a place in this England T20 side. OK, we had a 50-over match today, but just looking back at the T20s, whether Root has a place in England's T20 side, specifically in India, because he is very good at manoeuvring the ball around. He's good at, you know, if the ball spins, and you don't quite know where England are going to play, and some venues spin and others don't. So there's the Root factor. But one issue with Root, and this is a consideration, is that the World Cup T20, the T20 World Cup is just before the Ashes, and it looks as if the Ashes have been delayed a fraction, the start of the Ashes have been delayed a fraction to allow England to prepare for the Ashes. But what you could have is a situation, especially with, I mean, you don't know what's going to happen with quarantine regulations going into Australia. You could have a situation where if Root were to play in the World T20 in India, he would not have long before the first test of the Ashes series, and he's your captain, he's your main focus. So I don't know whether that's an issue or not, whether that's one of the reasons why he doesn't fit into England's T20 side, or perhaps the reason he doesn't fit into England's T20 side is because they simply don't see him as a strong enough T20 player at the moment, despite his all-round qualities. What do you think about that?
Well, it's a really good point. Logistics determining who you pick.
Yeah,
I actually think that Root would be brilliant for England's T20 side instead of Jason Roy, if it's in India. I think Roy is, you know, very, very destructive in the 50-over game if it's a flat pitch and not playing spin or in-swing. But he looks vulnerable to me, and he has got runs in these games, but they haven't been that convincing. And there have been a few miscues, and he's had plenty of opportunity, but he hasn't really delivered a massive score. And I think he's the one guy for me that is a bit vulnerable in these conditions. I've got no doubt that he's brilliant in Australia or England or somewhere like that in one-day cricket. In India, he looks to me like he tries to bludgeon the ball too much, and he's very rigid batsman, whereas Bairstow also is a bludgeoner but has a bit more flexibility, I think. And so I would look at Root instead of Roy, possibly. God knows what you do about the logistical argument. Well, you know, hopefully things will have eased up by then, I suppose, is your only optimistic thought.
Well, yeah. I mean, hopefully they have. But I don't think you can sort of plan an Ashes campaign necessarily on hope. I wonder whether that is an issue for England, that there would only be a short quarantine period. And, of course, it is going to be an issue for a couple of England's key players going into the Ashes.
Butler, Stokes,
Archer. And Archer. So, I mean, it may be that Archer doesn't play in the first Test match. Wood's another one as well. So, you know, there are considerations around that. And I suppose you'd have to look at the Australian one-day side, T20 side as well, whether, you know, there are issues there. But, I mean, it is a potential factor for the autumn. Let's look at more immediate concerns. What we have talked about so far is England, Yoz. What we haven't talked about is India, really. They have won three series against England. I think at the start, if you'd said, you know, who were favourites to win the Test series, the T20 and the one-day series, I think you'd say India were. And I think the white ball series were far more competitive than the Test series. England, you know, really gave India a game in the white ball. But this India side, this India squad, it's not a side, is it? They've got this pool of players, looks really strong. They look to have strength in depth.
I think that's an understatement. I think it's the strongest group of players, a squad of players, I think there's ever been in international cricket, actually. If you think about Australia's dominance in the 1990s or West Indies dominance in the 1980s, you know, they had a core of, in the case of the West Indies, they did have a lot of quick bowlers, but they really only had about four or five batsmen who were outstanding, and they didn't have any spinners or anything. The Aussies, similar, you know, they had a very good sort of core of seven or eight greats plus four or five very good cricketers, and, you know, a couple in the wings, but they didn't have 25 players that you could pick pretty much at random. I mean, there are so many fast bowlers, spinners that they can call on, obviously batsmen. If you think back to the early Test victories in Australia, Shubman Gill, you know, had a huge influence. Rahane, people like that. There's Mayank Agarwal, who played in that series as well. There's Shreyas Iyer, who was injured, who didn't come into the series because of his injury. You know, they've got a string of batsmen who they could call on. KL Rahul didn't play in that Test series, you know, and suddenly has come back in, made 100 in the one days. So, you know, built round Virat Kohli's skill with the bat, they've got any number of batsmen, with the X factor of Rishabh Pant, quite extraordinary player. And it's amazing to think now, isn't it, that they picked Ridhiman Saha for the first Test of that Australia series back in, what was it, late November, early December. I mean, just amazing that they would have even considered not picking Rishabh Pant now. What a dynamic player he has become. So, and all the seamers that haven't been part, like you mentioned Bumrah, there's Mohammad Shami, there's Ishant Sharma, there's Yadav, you know, they've got so many fast bowlers as well. So I think they're an incredible they have an incredible depth of talent, which is only going to get better with more and more IPLs. The IPL is going to expand into 10 teams next year. So even more opportunity for these young Indians.
Yeah, and this is something that Rob Key was talking about when he joined us in the virtual cricket club on Thursday. Rob, of course, has been commentating throughout the winter for Sky Television. So he's seen this India side up close.
Yeah, I mean, it's frightening, isn't it, really, how much they have. And it's so good to watch. I would love to see these next two games, I'd love to see Matt Parkinson play. Not because I really want to see a leg spinner or someone come in. I'd like to see if he's any good, because we've all seen him in the Blast and he looks fine. You know, he looks good, but that is another level. So I would like to see, England do what India did in the T20 series, an experiment, and see, you know, we need to find, you know, we've got plenty of options with the bat. No question. It's just about where do you fit the pieces? You know, where does Davin Milan, where does Ben Stokes, all these things, you know, but is Tom Banton going to come in? Is, you know, whoever, there's loads of options. I can't think of many with the ball. You know, if Wood and Jofra Archer go, who's going to replace one of them? If Adil Rashid goes, who's going to replace him? And that is, you know, in this summer we've got coming up, they're the things that I'd like to try and find out. See, is Reece Topley going to be the one? You know, that's what I'd like to see from tomorrow and the next couple of games.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the next three world tournaments, two of them are in India. I mean, is the rest of the world fighting a losing battle against India because they are so strong, especially in their own conditions?
You know, 2020 is an interesting game, isn't it? Because you can have one person can ruin your day. Like Carlos Brathwaite. Mm. You know, England had won that game and then he did that. But I think in 2020 there's a chance. 50 overs, slightly less in Test cricket. Man, because that to me, the game is about Test cricket. India can dominate that because in their own country, you know, no one's got a spinner to come close to theirs. I mean, they're not that good, their spinners, but no one else has one close. And the longer the game, as you know, as everyone knows, the more it's just how skillful are you? There's no luck involved. It's just skill versus skill. And I think there'll be a handful this year in England. Yeah. With Bumrah and these bowlers they got. I mean, how many times have you seen bowlers like they have now? I haven't in my time. Core.
That's very much a Kent word, core. I remember Alan Knott always saying that, actually, when you talked about a player and he was core. Oh, he's a fine batsman. It seems to be very much the way they describe things. When a Kent player says core, it means very good. And he's right. You know, amazing depth that the Indians have got, as we've said.
West Country phrase for quite good is lush. He's lush, he is. Well, that sort of means different. That means different things in different parts of the country, I think. But anyway, yeah, he's lush. He means he's very good. It was great to have Rob with us, actually. And one thing I really picked up on, and we're going to hear him say it now as well, is about his own career and how he thought. I've never heard a professional cricketer say this before. How he thought that playing for England, no trouble at all.
I was 22, I think, when I got picked for Australia. And that was that great side when Shane Warne and all that lot, and they were just too good for us. It was, I mean, we were playing a game from 10, 15 years earlier and they'd moved into, you know, the 2000s almost. You know, with Warne and people like that, we couldn't match them. And that was tough because that the standard was so much better than us. Yeah, and we would bat. And I remember facing Glenn McGrath. And I'd never faced him before. I'd played against Warne, but Glenn McGrath, I remember his first ball, he bowled me. I thought, here we go, this is going to be on. And I promise you, it was like 80 mile an hour, which isn't that quick. And I saw it all the way. It wasn't really taking the stumps on, and I just left it. And I thought, of course, all the big fuss about here. And then the next one, and I did the same thing, and I left it. And I sort of thought, why is everyone going on about Glenn McGrath? He's not that quick. You can see him quite easy. And then I did that for an over. And then I played Warne, and it was like I knew him a little bit, so that wasn't too bad. And then I have another over of Glenn McGrath, and I thought, right, okay, let's get some runs now. And then I thought, oh, there we go. That's why he's a good bowler, this bloke. Because I've got absolutely no idea how I'm going to score a run against him. I mean, I think I could block him forever, but couldn't even do that in the end. But when all of a sudden, when you thought, this bloke does not bowl a bad ball. And then the whole slip cordon was like behind you in this wall. And Steve Waugh, who played at Kent, he'd sort of look at you as if, he's a good bloke, Steve Waugh, but he had a way of looking at you like you've just, you know, like Fleur does when I've come in late and I haven't told her. Just like you're absolutely nothing. And then all of them in a sled, and a short leg, just, they didn't really sledge you. They sort of look at you as if like, who on earth are you? And then you just, eventually you go schnick and you're out after three overs of blocking the life out of it. And you think, oh, that's Test cricket then. That's pretty tough.
That's mental disintegration, isn't it? That's, you don't need to say anything. It's just Warne and McGrath and a few stares.
Well, I was really honest from Rob there. How he thought, you know, playing for England, it wasn't going to be a problem for him, because he did play for England. He did score a 200 against the West Indies at Lords, but he perhaps didn't quite make the most of his talent. If he played, I don't know, in the 90s, perhaps he'd have had more opportunity. There were one or two good players sort of just ahead of him.
He'd have been dropped a few more times if he played in the 90s, wouldn't he?
well, yeah, but he'd have been reselected a few more times as well, wouldn't he? He'd have been in, out. You know, that was the way of it in the 1990s. But anyway, he's very honest to say that. And of course, he's developing his career as a commentator for Sky at the moment.
Yeah, and I like listening to him. I think he's honest as a commentator, and he's got a good sense of humour. And there's some good interaction between him and Mike Atherton and Nasser Hussain as well. They liked, we did a quiz, didn't we, with Rob? And one of the questions was, what do you do on the tee to annoy your opponents? And he admitted he deliberately sniffs every time the players and the opponent player is on his backswing to try and put them off. He's just a great character. So, you know, well done to Sky for hiring him. And I think he's got really good insight, as he showed there.
So, Yoz, the tour comes to an end. But the cricket rolls on, doesn't it? I mean, for many of these players, it is not a break now. It's pretty much straight into the IPL. Was it start on the 9th of April and runs through until right to the end of May? 30th of May is the IPL final. Lots of England players involved, all the Indian players as well, of course. I see Pujara has got an IPL contract this time round, sort of bemoaning the fact that, you know, he doesn't play... you know, only plays a few months of the year, but he's got his IPL contract.
I think
as
that's
well.
First time for 7 years, I think.
Yeah,
exciting for him. Yeah, and you know, he can fill his. Well, presumably he'll get a game. I don't know. It must be quite daunting for him in a way, looking at all these power hitters, and there's him nurdling it for two through the leg side. Perhaps he's been at home doing some weights and getting on the steroids.
And Chris Wokes, of course, has got an IPL contract, so he is out preparing for it. It does seem a bit odd that he's not played in the white ball for England and India, but now
it's mad, isn't it?
He's a shoo-in, isn't he, in the one day side, in the 50 over side, because he didn't play in that series, but he is going to play in the IPL. At least he's available to play in the IPL. Of course, every franchise has 8 overseas players, and you can only play 4 of them. Anyway, so we'll get a chance to talk to him on Thursday in the virtual cricket club, which starts at 5:30. I was trying to work out what time it would be in India. It's 4.5 hours now, isn't it?
So,
10 o'clock.
Ten o'clock.
Yeah, so make sure you don't keep him up too late, Yoz.
It's really good, actually, because I invited him to come, and I said, can you make it at 7 p.m., 7 p.m. start? And he wrote a really kind text back saying, look, if you, I'd love to do it. Of course, I'd love to do it. Could you possibly find a slightly earlier time, because it's 12:30 in the morning in India. I said, look, of course, I've forgotten you're going to be in India. We'll make the time earlier, but actually you've got your sums wrong. The clocks have gone forwards, so it's only a 4.5 hour difference. So it actually would have been 11:30 p.m. rather than midnight after midnight. But anyway, he's joining us from 10 o'clock India time. And he's such a lovely guy, isn't he? And so we're assured a very rose-tinted evening about the World Game of Cricket, talking to Chris Wokes. And you can join us, as I said before, by going to worldsbestcricketclub.com. We're really keen to get as many of you involved in this. You can ask him direct questions. There'll be memorabilia to win. There's a special quiz that we do with each player as well. And actually, that just to give you a little kind of insight, there is going to be some Lord's tickets to win as well for the test matches coming up. So it is worth joining the club for lots of reasons.
Yeah, looking forward to Thursday. So it's all over for England in India. They won four of their 12 international matches, three white ball victories out of eight games. They won an incredible 10 out of 12 tosses. I mean, I think that's the one thing I felt actually about the white ball cricket. It was a bit samey, wasn't it? It would have been nice to see England bat first a few more times and just to see slightly different games of cricket. And you know, the test matches sort of followed a very familiar pattern as well. I don't think there's any doubt, not in my mind anyway, that India are going to provide a big challenge for England in England this summer. It all gets underway in August, but as we say, plenty of cricket to come before then. The IPL, the start of the Championship, the New Zealand series and white ball cricket, the World Test Championship final between India and New Zealand at the Aegeus Bowl. It just keeps on rolling, which is great actually, isn't it? Because this time last year we were thinking, when on earth is more cricket going to be played? And of course, we had that huge hiatus when the weather was fantastic outside and everyone was just sitting in their homes. I mean, I'm really hoping that in the next few months that spectators will be able to come back into the grounds in England and we can sort of gradually, you know, get the game going again, you know, and get, I suppose, money coming into the sport as well. It's absolutely vital.
Absolutely true. And to get a good guide to the season, you can subscribe to the Cricketer magazine. I told you before about the podcast celebrating the 100th anniversary issue. That is out now and it's full not only of a recap of the 100 years that the cricketers covered the game, but also a preview of the county season, two pages per county. And of course, our famous multicoloured wall chart giving you complete guide to the whole county and international season. And actually, just for good measure, we've added the 1921 county schedule on the back of the wall chart, just so you can compare and contrast as well. So you can subscribe to The Cricketer by going to www.thecricketer.com/centenary, and there is a special offer at the moment, £19.21 for 6 months of subscription, including this centenary issue. So well worth it. www.thecricketer.com/centenary for that special issue. And we'll be with Chris Wokes on Thursday night and then with you subsequently looking ahead to the county season and of course the IPL as well. So we'll join you then. Thanks for listening.
Thanks very much for listening. Goodbye for now.
Podcast Network.